Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. And my guest is Tom Gullickson, former tennis star, played singles and doubles. He's won 16 doubles titles, winner of the mixed doubles at the 84 US Open, runner-up with his twin brother Tim at the 83 Wimbledon, won a singles title in 1985 in Newport. A lot to talk about with Golly, Tom. Thanks so much for joining me on Sports Interview.
My pleasure, Ann. Happy to be with you.
So we were talking a little bit ago about that 81 Wimbledon when John McEnroe erupted at the umpire and said, "You cannot be serious." And it was so great that he reminded me that it was against you. You were playing him in singles, but that all that happened. Tell that story.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I get reminded of that story every Wimbledon. They kind of relive those moments and they show the clips, and I see my much skinnier self with very short shorts and big hair, you know, lunging for a forehand return that I couldn't reach. It was interesting. McEnroe at 81, he was the number two seed. I think he was ranked two in the world behind Bjorn Borg. It was first round on court one. And 81 was, of course, the summer of the baseball strike in the U.S. So there was absolutely no pro baseball in the U.S. that year. So the whole media attention around the world, certainly in the U.S., was on Wimbledon. And, you know, I always played pretty well on grass and was first round. I think John was a little nervous in his first round match. And the first two sets, I lost 7-5, 7-6. But I had five set points in those first two sets. So I technically could have been up two sets to love instead of being down two sets to love. And the incident took place, I think, around two all in the third set, where he was serving to the deuce court. He hits a hard lefty slice down the tee. I'm lunging for it and I can't reach it. Chalk flew up, and it was clearly an ace. And the linesman called it out, and the umpire agreed with him. And, McEnroe goes crazy, and he comes up to the umpire, the famous, "You cannot be serious. You know, you're the pits of the world." Chalk flew up. He was switching sides. And he went on and brought the referee, the guy by the name of Fred Hoyles, out. And they went at it for a while. And finally, we ended up resuming the match. And he ended up winning in that set. So he won the match. And I don't know if he won Wimbledon. I think he ended up winning Wimbledon that year. I think that's the first year he won it. So
that's right.
Yeah. It was a highly charged moment. And this was before, the electronic line calling. So clearly when you challenge the call, it had to be through the umpire and through his eyes, not some great electronic line system. So there were a lot more controversies back in those days with guys like, McEnroe, Connors, Ely Nastasi, certainly, than there are now, because if you have a problem, you just appeal to the umpire and they show it on the big screen. So
what a memory that was. So what was the final? What was the final score then?
I think it was 7-5, 7-6, 6-3. So yeah.
No, how did you react when all that was going on? It's such an infamous moment for John McEnroe. How did you handle it?
Well, I just kind of was kind of waiting there while he kind of standing around, kind of taking a few practice swings and just kind of waiting till all the chaos kind of disappeared and then just resumed the match. But it's hard to regain your focus when stuff like that is happening on the court. And John was pretty used to, kind of arguing and venting and whatever. So he happened to be great at going crazy over a call or over something. And then he had a pretty unique ability to play well the next couple points and kind of just move right past it, whatever incident that happened, you know?
Well, I remember you and Tim, identical twin brothers, and such a formidable doubles team. I mean, you know, the Bryan brothers just retired after, what, 119 titles, and then some.
Right.
But yeah, before the Bryans, really, it was the Gullies, don't you think?
Well, they passed our, you know, I think we won 10 titles together, and then I ended up winning 16 doubles titles. But, the Bryans, you know, amazing team, identical twins like Tim and I, never really could quite understand why they called them the Bryan brothers rather than the Bryan twins. But I guess it was a marketing tool or something. I don't know. But and, you know, in a mere twin, you know, Tim stuck out his right hand in the crib and I stuck out my left hand. And that's how you end up having a left and right-handed twin. It's called being a mirror twin. You're kind of playing with each other in the crib, and he sticks out his right hand and I stick out my left, and he sticks out his right, I stick out my left. And that's what they call mirror twins, you know?
Oh, that's fun. So what was the most memorable? I mean, I know you and your brother are very close, and I remember when he passed with brain cancer back in 95, it was so tragic. And that must've been such a rough time for you and your family.
Yeah, no, Tim, he was actually diagnosed at the Australian Open in 94. And he kind of passed, he had a seizure in the locker room right before round match, I think. And I happened to be in there as well. And we got him right to the hospital. And we kind of found out in Melbourne that he probably had brain cancer. And that was a tough moment for all of us. And in true Tim fashion, he had a great spirit about it. He fought like a champion, but, you know, 16 months later in May of 96, he passed away from the brain cancer when he was 44 years old. So it was a huge loss then. And I still feel it today. I think about him every day still.
I'm sure that pain never goes away. I know Tim was the one that coached the then number one player in the world, Pete Sampras.
Yeah, Tim was an amazing player. He got up to 15 in the world when he was playing, and he was even a more amazing coach. Sampras's record at Wimbledon, he hired Tim specifically to help him with his grass court game to win Wimbledon, because Pete's record at Wimbledon before Tim started coaching him was 2 first round losses and a second round loss. So in Pete's first three Wimbledons, he only won one match. And he didn't really have much of a backhand return. And Tim had probably one of the best one hand backhand returns on the tour because, you know, I'm left-handed, he was right-handed. So we played about 5 hours a day our whole life. So my lefty serve would go out wide to his backhand. So he had to learn, playing against a left-hander, how to have a good backhand return, especially out on the ad court where you can serve a right-hander way off the court into the alley, you know? And so Pete really, Timmy taught Pete how to return serve on grass, certainly taught him how to play against left-handers. And, you know, he won Wimbledon 7 out of the next 8 years. So I'd say that was a pretty good adjustment.
Wow, what a great run.
You know, I was a big, you know, Tim and I growing up in La Crosse and Onalaska, Wisconsin, we played all the sports. We were all state basketball players. And we played baseball and football a little bit, tennis, you know, anything with a ball in it. All, you know, and I started playing golf when I was 10. And my dad was right-handed, but he played golf left-handed, as he batted left-handed in baseball. And so my brother Tim, he was right-handed, but he hit left-handed in baseball. He played left-handed golf as well. So my dad and Tim and I were all left-handed golfers. So yeah, we started playing golf probably when we were 10 years old, you know, so.
Do you do anything right-handed or no?
No, I have an adult beverage every once in a while with my That's about it.
I remember doing an interview with Yogi Berra for the Golf Channel, and he putt righty and he hit everything else lefty. So I'd say, Yogi, I didn't know you were ambidextrous on the golf course. He said, I'm not, Ann, I'm amphibious.
That's funny. That's funny.
Anyway, I didn't realize Tim was ambidextrous, but you were you're a lefty on the golf course and on the tennis courts. That's great. And it's I'm a
pure lefty.
And in golf, would you say there are any advantages to being a lefty, or it's just harder to find good clubs?
Well, now, I mean, you know, I've been with Wilson for the last 25 years in tennis, and they were kind enough to set me up with a nice custom fit set of golf clubs and their latest technology. So, you know, their innovation center is right out near O'Hare Airport. So
my wife and I
got custom fit for a nice set of clubs. And yeah, it's amazing with technology how that can combat kind of old age. And I'm hitting my 7-iron further now than I ever did when I was 20, 25 years old.
Isn't that great?
It's all the technology.
So you and your wife can travel all over the world to play golf, right?
Yeah, she played college tennis too. She played number one at Santa Clara for 4 years in college. So she's a very good tennis player and a very, very good golfer. And yeah, we have a lot of fun playing golf and tennis together.
Where do you like to play the most? I mean, have you played in the UK, Ireland, or Scotland?
I played in Ireland a little bit, not a lot. I played in Scotland a couple of times. Honestly, I like playing in the U.S. I mean, a little spoiled, you know, in Scotland, I used to play a lot of the senior events at Wimbledon, and a lot of times I go to Scotland for a week to play golf to prepare for Wimbledon. I called it my cross training, you know, another sport to get ready for your main sport. But you go to a course in Scotland and they don't have a range, and you know, it's nowhere to warm up, and they won't let you take a mulligan off the first tee, and it's kind of un-American, you know.
You have to warm up, especially a former tennis player, right? You're used to.
Yeah, well, especially when half the time you play, it's like 50 degrees and raining a little bit or something. But I enjoyed my golf experiences all over the world. I played. My brother and I used to do a lot of corporate outings for like IBM and Philip Morris and whatever toward the end of our playing career. And we did something for IBM down in the Bermuda one time, and we played mid-ocean golf course.
Oh, I love times. Mid-ocean.
Yeah. Mid-ocean was fabulous. We had a great time there. You know, I played those courses, you know, the Ernie Els course in the Bahamas, you know, Mark Knowles had a charity event that I used to go to down there. And we would always play that ocean course down there at near Atlantis there. And it's challenging all over the world, but I like our U.S. courses.
Well, if you're that low of a handicap, you should be giving Marty Fish a run for his money. Marty won that championship last year in Tahoe.
No, Marty's miles better than me. I mean, there's so many, like tennis, there's a lot of levels, and you know, I'm a good club golfer, but he's a real player. He hits it a mile, and he's got a really good short game. He's a good putter. I mean, he doesn't really have many weaknesses in his golf game. So, I mean, he's a legit player, but he can hit it a long way, you know.
A lot of tennis players love golf. You know, you have Marty Fish, you have Andy Roddick, you have Todd Martin, a lot. And why do you think that's the case? Is it, you know, Tim same Henman, swing, you different know, Tim, playing?
Tim Henman's a scratch golfer as well.
Yeah, and Jim Courier loves it.
Yeah, he's, well, I think number one, when you look, I have a guy there in Orlando who I'm kind of working remotely with, Clay Ballard, his golf system down there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's a very good coach. It's called Top Speed Golf.
Oh. Ah.
And I joined their kind of instruction website.
Huh.
And And yeah, it's very good information. But you know, as a student of the tennis game, and I'm still coaching some tennis at Midtown Athletic Club in Chicago, and it's like 5 minutes from our house. We live about a 20-minute walk to Wrigley Field on the north side. And we're, you know, literally 5 minutes by car to Midtown, which is probably the finest indoor tennis facility in the country by far, you know.
Wow.
And, yeah, so I'm a student of the game in tennis. And, you know, tennis and golf are a lot alike. And you'll see a lot of top golf instructors. They have a tennis racket as an instructional tool on the range to talk about the turn and then the release and everything. And really, a golf stroke, a golf swing is a forehand in tennis, only on a different plane. So your exact kind of forehand swing in tennis in terms of rotating your body and whatever, it's exactly like the golf swing.
So I used to come up too much, though, because, you know, when you play tennis, you know, I would always kind of come up on my toes, mm-hmm. especially hitting a forehand topspin. I had to really focus on staying planted
right.
With my feet for golf.
Right. Yeah. No, it's but yeah, golf is it's a challenging sport. I think obviously when you combine the physical and the mental, tennis is harder, but just on a mental level, golf is much harder.
Oh yeah.
If I'm playing somebody with a good serve in tennis, you know, I hit four returns into the back fence and they hold their serve. And then I serve and I'm probably going to hold my serve and it's one all. I hit four bad drives on a golf course out of 14 drives. You know, I'm going to shoot a high score and my day is ruined.
You're done.
Making a good score. So mentally golf and with the ball just sitting on the ground, you know, golf is a sport where you can really plan and visualize your shot, stand behind the ball, visualize the shot, take a few intentional practice swings, and then get up and hit the ball. In tennis, you know, when you're playing a John Isner or somebody, he tosses the ball up, you're dialing 911. You're in an emergency situation. I mean, that ball is going to come 140 down the tee or 120 out wide, you know, and those two spots on the deuce side are like 20, 25 feet apart in terms of what you have to cover, and you have a split second to react. So tennis is all about kind of reacting to a moving object, and golf, and the ball is sitting there. That's why golf gets in your head so much, you know.
I know. What could be so difficult about hitting a stationary ball?
Yeah,
but well, it's really the hardest sport on the planet.
I love Brooks Koepka. They interviewed him after one of his rounds at, you know, one of the majors that he won a couple of years ago. And the interviewer was trying to get him to kind of, well, what are your swing thoughts? So, you know, what are you thinking out there when you're on the court? What are your swing thoughts? And he kind of looked at her and he goes, I have no swing thoughts. And she wanted more of an answer, but you know, that was a beautiful answer.
That's true.
Because, well, you're a tennis player and a golfer like me. And, you know, I think back to all the best tennis I played. And I think back to my one perfect round of golf where I shot 66 one day at the conservatory in Palm Coast. And it was right after Tom Watson.
Wow.
The course and done a 1 hour clinic, and then he played nine holes and he played the front nine, and he would talk about the hole with his architect hat on, and then he would talk about the hole as a player. And it was really inspirational to me to see an 8-time major winner do this instruction. And I went out and the next Friday I was on the range just hitting balls, and there's this new member there. He said, hey, I'm going to go out to play nine. You want to join me? And I'd much rather play than hit ball. So he said, sure. So I shot. nice. That's great. So I shot 33 on the front nine, you know, and I'm like, wow. you know, I might keep going. I normally don't shoot 33, and I ended up shooting 33 on the back nine. And in Watson's instruction, one of the members asked him, you know, how do you gain consistency? What's the key to being consistent, you know, to, you know, hitting consistently good shots and making good contact with the ball? And clearly consistency in any sport is something you aspire to. And Tom Watson said, well, there's no question. The number one fundamental in golf is to keep your spine angle stable. Huh. Keep your spine stable, turn away from the ball, and then rotate and turn back through the ball and keep your spine very stable. And that's the only thing I was thinking of. I had one swing thought, keep your spine stable. And I went out and shot 66, and I've never been able to replicate it since.
But still, a 66, that's phenomenal. And yes, I always admired Brooks Koepka and his mental game. And if you can think of nothing, that is a true art form, because in golf, you have a lot of time to think. And a lot of times we have too much clutter between the ears, and that's what messes us up. Right. So if you can go out there and think of nothing, that is truly genius.
Well, somebody made a good point one time, and that said, you know, so use visualization, right? You know, visualize your shot, you know, and swing to the picture, swing to your picture. And that was a great point. So here's the shot I want to play. This is how I want to hit the shot. You know, this is a trajectory. This is where I want to land the ball. And then, you know, you just try to swing to that picture, and your brain is pretty good at kind of adjusting in to whatever you're trying to do.
Be honest with me. Were you more nervous in the Wimbledon finals or teeing it up at a high profile celebrity golf tournament?
Well, I haven't really played many celebrity. I've played a lot of charity events, but I've never really played in a pro-am of a pro tournament. I'd probably be pretty nervous doing that. But the Wimbledon final was pretty nerve-wracking, walking out on the center court, you know, and bowing to the royal box. And, you know, that's a pretty special place. I mean, it's kind of, in golf terms, it'd be the Augusta National of golf, you know, where there's a certain reverence to it. You know, it hasn't been completely bought out by the corporate world. Like, you walk on the center court at Wimbledon, there's no advertising. There's not one sign there. The only advertisement there is the Rolex clock. You know, you see the Rolex clock on center court. That's it, you know, and there's a kind of a purity about that. And, people always say, well, what's your favorite Grand Slam? And my answer is, I love all four of them for different reasons. But to be, you know, more of a tennis purist, if you will, I love Wimbledon.
Have you had an opportunity to play Augusta National?
Yes. Yeah, we won the Davis Cup. You know, when I was Davis Cup captain for 6 years, we won the cup in 95 in Russia. And the USTA said, golly, what can we do for the guys that would really be special? You know, they're all multimillionaires, so giving them a little extra cash is not going to mean anything. And I said, get us on Augusta National. They all these guys love to play golf, and so does the captain, you know.
Wow. And,
they said, we'll work on that. And they ended up getting us on Augusta National. So me and five of the players, so we had six of us, we all met in Augusta. We took them out to a nice steak dinner the night before, and then rolled up in the morning and had a nice breakfast, hit some balls on the range. We played the par three course and walked out, and you had to play with one member. So three of us played with one member and three of us played with the other member. And, afterward, we settled our bets and had a nice lunch and went into the pro shop, pretty much bought out the pro shop, because everybody had a long list from family and friends of, hey, could you give me a hat or a shirt or, you know, whatever. So we all went into the pro shop and took out our credit card, and the nice thing was they would send anything anywhere you wanted to send it. So you didn't have to take it. You could just send it to someplace.
What a great story. So after you captained the Davis Cup team to that win in 1995, I know you're the captain from 94 to 99. Did you play that year?
Yeah, I did.
You played Augusta National. They worked pretty quickly to get you on Augusta National. That's impressive.
Well, we played it the following year.
That's still pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, that was phenomenal. And we all had a great experience. It was really a fun day. It was really a memorable day.
Tom Gullickson, thank you so much for the time. Just fascinating. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Great to meet you.
Thanks again.